Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on this Wednesday. ESPN 102.5 The Game. So we laid out in the first hour NHL's plans. They were the first to jump out there and let everybody know with their 24-team return to play format. We'll see what is in store with Major League Baseball, the NBA, where is that going. NFL's quiet, which makes us think that it's business as usual. That's basically been their offseason, business as usual. Now, the big question, college football. We bring in Heather Denich to talk about their plan for the fall. She covers college football for ESPN, does a great job doing it. Heather, how you doing?
I'm okay. Thanks for having me on. How are you guys?
We're doing it. A little rainy here in Nashville, but we'll get over it. We'll just keep, you know, moving forward like we've been for the last 2.5 months. I saw where the University of Tennessee kind of put out their fall semester plan for students. And it looks like they're going to try to eliminate the fall break and basically get done with the semester around Thanksgiving or so. Where do you think this is headed, college football on campus and the whole season? And when do you think, all this is going to start getting ramped up, in your opinion?
Well, Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby told me the closest thing I've heard to a timeline, which is, in his words, we have to be up and running by mid-July in order for the season to start on time. And, you know, the season obviously tentatively kicks off on August 29th. And if you want to give the players at least 6 weeks to get in physical condition to play a game, which most coaches agree is how much time you need to avoid some of those soft tissue injuries and hurrying, then that's about when you have to do it. But that being said, I'm finally starting to see from schools tangible plans on paper, PDF files of this is what has to happen. And yesterday the Pac-12 announced that its student-athletes can begin to return for voluntary workouts as soon as June 15th. Now, remember, when all these conferences say this, that doesn't mean that the students will come. That means they're allowed to. But the Pac-12's release was interesting to me because it also had a PDF, and it was very specific about saying student-athletes, coaches, and staff members have to be tested before they come. They have to be symptom-free. They have to be fever-free. This is what happens. If you have a positive test result, you have to, you know, quarantine. You have to have a negative test result 3 days later, 5 days later, or whatever it was. But I think you're starting to see specifics, and that, to me, is what's different about where we are right now in having these conversations. It's an acknowledgement, hey, somebody's going to test positive, but we're going to plow through, and this is kind of our plan for what's going to happen when it does.
Do you think everybody has to be uniform? Does everybody have to be involved for this to happen? Is there actually going to be schools that don't participate? I mean, right now you've got the Michigan dynamic with Michigan and Michigan State, their uncertainty. And I thought, honestly, the Pac-12 would have a lot of question marks, but you laid it out well. It looks like they may be moving in the right direction. But there are other cities or markets that could have issues with this. How do they work around that, trying to get 130 schools on the same page?
Well, I don't know if they can, and I think that there's a concession amongst the Power Five commissioners that they might not be able to. Now, they're always talking constantly. They're in constant communication. They're not necessarily always on the same page as far as when and how to do things, but I do know that there is a concentrated effort to be as uniform as they can. Now, that being said, all of these announcements that are coming out from the conferences about these voluntary workouts, you'll notice, have these clauses in them saying, if your university allows and your state and government officials allow you to, we will allow you to, right? So it's this blanket statement with a caveat that it's also up to the local governments and health experts and university presidents as to whether or not these student-athletes can actually physically get back into the facilities at this point. Some can, some can't, you know. And Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, they put out a release. They're not allowing them back until July 1st. So I think as you see these voluntary workouts, which is a baby step compared to where the sport needs to kick off on August 29th, you're already seeing patchwork decisions being made. You're seeing Oklahoma doing something different than everybody else. And the Big 12 collectively has said you can come back as soon as June 15th. You're seeing the SEC and the Big 12 and the Pac-12 make conference-wide announcements, while the ACC has said we're going to go school by school. The Big 10 has said we'll leave it up to school by school. And so far, I think only two schools in the ACC have made announcements, Louisville and Clemson. So, and that, like I said, that's just the start. This is voluntary workouts we're talking about. And I think that there's more optimism throughout the leaders of college football, but at the same time, so much changes from day to day, from week to week and month to month about what we know about the coronavirus and how far-reaching one positive test can be. I think that is where the question remains, right? You have all this stuff laid on paper, you have all these plans in place, and that's necessary and it's good. But my question is, what happens if a team has to forfeit a game because the infection is so widespread and the quarantine is that much? If you get to that point, what happens if it is so patchwork that you've got one playing 10 games, one playing 12 games? I don't think that they're there yet as far as those conversations.
Great stuff. Heather Dinich is with us from ESPN talking about the possible return of college football. So let's take it a step further, Heather, with the testing itself. And I think this is probably an issue for all of the leagues that presumably want to come back. Well, not presumably. They want to come back. And they all say it's going to include extensive testing. But as we sit here today, I think we're all wondering, does the kind of testing that they're saying they're going to have actually exist? And so what are you hearing along those lines? Because I know everybody wants to get there. But you know, I think some stuff that's out of their hands has to happen to get the kind of testing they have in their mind, their goal.
Right. So there's two parts to that question. One, I'm told from NCAA's Chief Medical Officer Brian Hainline that's going to be up to the university level or the conference level to pay for those tests, which right now I'm seeing between, he said, $100, $150. Some universities like Rutgers are trying to produce their own tests. But I think the biggest question is, how long does it take to find out the test result? Are they the rapid tests, or are they taking, I mean, here where I live in Maryland, I got an email from my doctor that said, we'll let you know in 4 to 5 days. Well, if you're a quarterback and you may have symptoms on Thursday and you got to play on Saturday, you better have a test that tells you sooner than that whether or not you can go, and you have to test everybody else in the quarterback meeting room to figure out if they can go. So I think the turnaround time is a question, where they're getting them, how they're paying for them. I didn't get a chance to circle back with the Pac-12 yesterday on this question, but who's providing the tests? I would be surprised if the conferences or the schools don't have that for them. I think it would be hard to expect student-athletes to be able to get them themselves. So I think there's a lot of questions. And there are physicians who are within the sports world who are saying, this is great, this is positive, but we have to make sure that we're not also taking them away from the general public who really needs these tests
right
as well. So certainly questions still looming out there as far as the testing.
You brought up a great one, and I think we've had, I know we've had a few listeners that have reached out to us with, you know, the hypotheticals, because you brought up an excellent ethical question. Quarterback for X team feels great, but he's got some symptoms, or they've done some testing and they've decided, hey, he's, you know, he may have it. Maybe we're not sure. We don't have the results. They won't be in until Saturday. You know, there's a lot of things you could put in your mind as possible scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach and the player are sitting there, man, we need this guy to win. This is a big game. I mean, that's a really tough one where it's easy for us from the outside to say, yeah, you shouldn't play, just take him out. But that's probably easier said than done, right? And you would have to think that these types of things are going to come up.
Right. And I think also people need to remember, and I'm not speaking as a doctor by any means here, but based on what we've been told by medical experts, this is not the flu, right? This is a knock you on your rear end if you really have it type thing for two weeks, right? So I think that there is going to be a hypersensitivity to fever and symptoms because of CDC guidelines and government expectations and whatever you want to call it, right? Some legality and liability issues here that are going to say we can't take a chance with this. And I think that those kinds of things are extremely serious. The question that I have is transparency. I mean, when a kid gets a knee injury or, you know, he rolls his ankle or whatever it is, that's not always released to the media. And when you're talking about unpaid student athletes, health and privacy is a huge deal. Will we know? I don't know if we'll know if the quarterback tested positive or if he's just not going to show up for 2 weeks. That's my question as a reporter, too, is, you know, you have an obligation to tell the people around you within 6 feet, right? And those within the program in that circle are certainly going to know. But as fans and reporters covering the game and you're watching it, I don't know. Why is he out?
Heather Dinich is with us from ESPN, and you know, as I listen to this conversation, Heather, I hate to even think this way, but I do, based on what you just said of, in, you know, how many times you hear a coach say, "Oh, a player's fine," and it's, you know, they're trying to cover an injury or not give the competitive advantage or what have you. But do we trust not just the coaches but the players to, knowing how big of a deal this is, to make the right decision and come be forthcoming with some of this information? And that's a question that I don't know if I can really answer right now.
I don't think anybody can. And, you know, it's completely different, but it reminds me, in a sense, of the very first year of covering the college football playoff when nobody, not even Bill Hancock, not the coaches, nobody knew what it was going to be like. And as it unfolded year after year, people started to learn more about how it worked. And I think you're seeing that even with news releases and press releases that are coming out from conferences with some of the smartest people in the world, doctors at these universities. You put out this release and you still have questions about it. Like, well, who's paying for the test? How much does the test cost? And it's like, oh, we have all these other questions that we have to answer. So I think everyone is kind of figuring this out and actually stepping onto the field, playing a game, being in a locker room, being in a weight room, 6 feet apart with every other treadmill roped off. All of those other kinds of things are going to bring to light unintended consequences, a dozen more questions. And I think you're just going to have to try and figure those things out as you go along. All of us, reporters, fans, coaches, trainers, players, everyone involved in college football is going to, it's a continuous learning process.
I think that we would probably all agree that of just how detrimental it would be to college athletics, not just college football, if the season isn't played at all. But how many long-term lasting effects do you think that there would be if, let's just say, everything's fine in August, and so it all starts how it's supposed to, but then as it gets colder, there's another flare-up, and all of a sudden college football finds themselves in the same position as MLB or the NBA or the NHL, and they all of a sudden just have to stop the season? What type of long-term effects do you think could come from that?
It would be devastating, but I think that there would – it's so hard to answer that question. I know the Power Five commissioners are concerned about that possibility. I know that they've talked about it. I don't know that they have any answers or solutions to what would happen at that point. I think it's just – it's one of those things where the financial situations across the country are so dire that if they can play and do it in a safe way that goes along with CDC and health guidelines, they will play, knowing that that's a possibility, knowing that there will be positive tests. This is all an acceptance, saying, okay, we know these things are going to happen and that's a possibility, but we think it's worth the risk. You have to ask the question, why is it worth the risk? Well, you can answer it a lot of different ways, and that's for those people to answer the question. But that's what it all boils down to, because everyone has certainly said, we know there are going to be positive tests.
Yep. Good stuff, as always, Heather. Really appreciate the visit, and we're getting close to June, and maybe we'll get more answers to all these sports, but in particular this conversation, college football. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much.
All right, that is Heather Denich, covers college football for ESPN. We'll come back and discuss some of what you heard and what is the future. What is it going to look like for this upcoming fall season? We'll do that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 102.5, The Game.
Well, obviously, if they have a season, he needs to play. So, you know, we're not thinking about that right now. But, you know, I guess the kids are in the same boat because if you don't have a season, this is going to affect the next level, which is the NFL, and nobody has the answers right now. But if there's a college season, he definitely plays. It's not, you know, the rankings and all that. Like you said, it's way too early. You know, it goes on what you've done in the past, and he understands that, you know, you're judged by what you do, you know, in the present. So he's looking forward. He loves the game of football, and he wants to get out there and put it on the line for his teammates, you know, in order to possibly move up in the draft. You know, it's rankings, you know, none is set in stone yet, but he loves the game, and if there's a game to be played, then he's definitely going to play it.
That was Patrick Surtain on Golic and Wingo this morning talking about his kid who's supposed to be a very, very high draft pick, and something that I've been thinking about when we were talking with Heather Denich. They do owe it to these kids and their families to give them a plan. And to tell them, what is the plan for this upcoming season? Is there going to be football? Because here's the deal. And I know it doesn't get much attention because rarely do people get selected. But the NFL supplemental draft is in, I think, July. You know, if right. There's not going to be a season, guess what could happen? Kids that are eligible? They could go in the supplemental draft. They could jump right into. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't come out with something if maybe you see more activity we've seen from the supplemental draft in a long time. Now, the reason you don't get much activity in the supplemental draft is because whatever round you take them in is the round you lose in the draft, right? So
yeah.
I guess the last big name, you know, Terrell Pryor was a supplemental draft from the Raiders. They used a third-round pick on him. Josh Gordon by the Browns, they used a second-round pick on him in the supplemental draft. That kid Sam Beal from the Giants, they jumped out there and used a third-round pick on him in 2018. And I know there's not, like I said, there's not a ton of activity. Usually one, two kids go in the supplemental draft. But if there's real uncertainty and you're eligible, or you get the feeling like, I'm not sure this is going to happen, don't you owe it to these kids to maybe go on and start their future? I mean, they don't want to sit there and do nothing in the fall.
Sure.
They have the ability to start their professional career if they like. Don't they owe it to them and their families to give them an answer?
I'll tell you what, it's a really interesting question because there's a certain category of player, and it's rare, right? You know, for the majority of the college football players, it might be, if they're seniors or their last year of eligibility, it might be the last chance they have to play football, right? So that's a totally different category, right, for a lot of teams. You know, teams that, you know, might have one guy that has a shot of being drafted. I mean, that happens a lot. So we got to think about the perspective. But for those players that fit that category, it's a very legitimate question, right? Just thinking time's on their side, they're going to have an opportunity to get drafted even if they don't play a single down in this uncertain season, right? They know they have the measurables. So I don't know. I'd like to know exactly what number we're talking about, because imagine if all those players came to the same conclusion. And even if they didn't go into the supplemental draft, even if they just decided, I'm sitting out this college season because I don't know what's going to happen. There's a lot of uncertainty here. I'm just going to start training as if I would if I was not playing in the bowl game. I'm just going to start the training now. I'm going to work out. I'm going to miss out on the reps, yeah, but I'll sacrifice that part for knowing that I'm going to be healthy and in good shape for the real draft. You know, I think this is a really compelling conversation.
We've already seen enough examples that this whole notion that it hurts them, it doesn't. Okay, it just doesn't. Nick Bosa did it, and he basically shut it down. After that game against TCU early in the season, he just shut it down and said, man, I'm focusing on the draft. And what did he go? Third overall here in Nashville? Second, third overall, the 49ers here? We've seen guys shut it down, you know, different points of the season and just say, you know what, I'm going to preserve my body and I'm not playing anymore. And if they're good, they don't care about that. They just don't. And so the whole notion that that could hurt them, it only hurts the guys who are borderline, right? The guys who are really good and really talented, it doesn't hurt them. They would jump out there, you know, if there was some really, like Patrick Surtain's kid, if he jumped out there in the supplemental draft, somebody would use a first-round pick on him because he's going to go in the first round anyway. So somebody's going to jump out there and acquire his services. If Trevor Lawrence just jumped out there in the supplemental draft, somebody's going to do a first-round pick on him.
Well, is he eligible?
No, but I'm saying, I don't know, is he?
I don't believe he is, because I've been looking that up. I don't think he is, based on what I found.
Etienne, the Clemson running back.
Travis Etienne.
Etienne, what's his status?
He's the same. They're both juniors this year. This will be their junior year.
But they have
red shirt.
They have to be 3 years removed from high school is how I understand it.
Wait a minute, but if they're redshirt juniors, aren't they eligible?
Pretty sure one of them is a redshirt junior.
I think Trevor's a true junior.
Okay,
yeah,
so
I think Etienne is a redshirt. He could be eligible. You tell me if he jumps in the supplemental draft, somebody's not going to jump out there and take him?
Oh, I would think so.
Absolutely.
Because Etienne could have gone – I think he could have gone pro this year if he wanted to. Like,
yes.
He could have been in the actual draft.
I think he
decided to stay. Yeah.
Right, he
yeah.
decided to stay. But I'm saying if there's uncertainty, you know, maybe he just jumps in the supplemental draft and just gets on with it.
Yeah, Trevor's a sophomore. So, yeah, he would have to play one more year.
He's not a sophomore. He's going into his junior year.
He's rising junior.
Yeah, rising junior. Yeah, so but he's a true junior. That's what I'm trying to say. He's a true junior.
He has not redshirted.
Right. So you have to be, how I understand it, what I was just reading, you have to be 3 years removed from high school. So however that, if you're, you know, true junior or the redshirt year or whatever, you just have to be 3 years removed. Is how that works.
I just think that they are, you know, they owe it to the families and to these kids if this, you know, what their plan is. If everything is going to be okay.
They can't have the plan. There's no way that you can know, right? I just don't know that that can happen as much as you're right. That would be nice to be able to do that, but everybody would love to have the plan, right, for anything, whether we're talking about something in sports or something else. We all want to have the plan for what the school season or the school atmosphere, environment is going to be like for all the kids in the fall, but I don't know that we can have that plan right now.
Well, when do we think they have to?
Well,
have
I'm talking about the question. If it's school by school, the school owes them that, right? If they're going to lay a lot of this into,
but how
the
can they know?
Lab.
How can they know? How much time would you be willing to give them before you have to know?
July 1.
That's,
wouldn't that be fair?
I would say that's fair. Yeah.
Because there has to, you know.
We're talking about for all students, right? Not just for these particular
sure
elite players.
Yeah. I mean, I
they want to have that athletes. Answer as fast as they can. We know they want to have the answer as fast as they can. But let's say on July 1st, they're still working through the testing and all these things we just talked about with Heather. I mean, my head was spinning with her talking about some of these things that I really hadn't thought about. But, wow. I mean, what are the chances they can have all that laid out by July 1st? Probably not that great.
Well,
right? There's probably going to be still some things in July 1st that they're thinking, man, I think we have a chance to have this done by August 1st, but we'll just have to hope that can be true. We don't know it can be true.
But isn't there like real questions about Michigan and Michigan State this season? Haven't their ADs made comments? because of the way the state has, you know, what's happened in Michigan, the state of Michigan?
I think there are real but I think there are real questions about a lot of places, and that's kind of where I was going to go with that. Of all right, so if you say July 1st, we'll have an idea for you by July 1st. You know, do you then say, but understand that this is an ever changing situation? So, we could have more information by August 1st, and our plans could change by August 1st. But
that's the reality.
If
right?
you want to make a decision by July 1st, we respect that. I mean, so
you can absolutely put the plan out there, but you can't guarantee that that plan is going to stay exactly the way you plan it, right?
Which is basically what the NHL is, you know, they have laid out their plan, but they're also saying, you know, if we resume, I mean, there's still a lot of questions that we need to answer from a health and safety standpoint. So this could all change. And I think they're being transparent.
But even if you're the most optimistic and you're saying we're playing, right? Hey, we know the money's at stake. We're playing. You can do that all you want, but you still might come to a point where if things go a certain way, you're going to have to scrap the plan.
Well, and it's like I asked Heather, because in Darren, we all agree, but Darren, you've brought this up a lot of if college football doesn't happen, then there are a lot of other sports on a campus, insert campus name here, that they're going away. That's the unfortunate truth of all of this. But what happens if, all right, good to go. Everything's not fine, but we're good to play. And so we're going to play. And then all of a sudden, October 13th, it comes out that, you know, half a team has tested positive, and then in one place, and then you have another place that it's flaring up, and there's fear that, okay, these schools are probably going to get some positive tests. And you start having conferences in schools saying, hey, we gotta take a pause. We got to take a break. To me, that's going to just cause even more problems. And I know in a perfect world that you would love to be able to say, because we're starting, that means we're going to finish. But we're not going to know that. Nobody is going to know the answer to that, that if they get started, that they're going to be able to finish. And I think that that's what really scares people.
Well, let's go back to the original question. Patrick Surtain thoughts, right? He had that was a great interview, and I think we hit on this probably over a month ago. Would anybody blame? Let's just take Trevor Lawrence, because he's probably the most obvious, surefire first pick, even if he doesn't play a single play this entire season. Would anybody blame him if he just said, you know, I'm just going to sit it out. I'm going to wait. Whenever they tell me I'm eligible to be drafted, I'm just going to wait till that day. I'm going to train by myself until then. I don't think you could blame him if he did that. Now, it might be really hard for
him. I don't know if anybody would blame anyone for anything.
Wants to be for his he might really want to be there for his team, right? If his team's playing, he may really – part of him might be just saying, I'm a competitor. I'm a good teammate. I want to be out there. I want to be with my guys. That would be the dilemma that he would have to – wrestle with, but from a pure long range planning standpoint, I think a lot of people would advise him to sit out.
Why would they advise him to sit out?
Because he's going to be the first or second pick in the draft, even if he doesn't play a single play.
Okay, there's players like that all the time. When they're, that happens every year. We know there are certain players they're going to be. You know, we knew Chase Young this year was coming into the Ohio State season, was very special and was going to be a top three pick. So why would any of them play when they all know they're going to get drafted high? So what's changed? I mean, that's the case every year.
You're really asking that question? What has changed?
Why would he sit out? I don't understand. Because he's the number one pick? I mean, that's every year. There's kids that we know will go number one or number two or whatever. So isn't that the same question you could ask every year? So why is this year any different?
Well, I think it
because
would be.
This year there's a pandemic? Hello? Am I not
so
saying
how does
obvious?
That change?
What am I missing here?
Are you saying because if you're telling me that he's got real concerns, that's one thing. But what would change? Yeah. Why would he sit
Why would you not have concerns?
I mean, I think it's the same as if I'm a hockey player and, you know, this plan comes out and everybody agrees on it and they're going to start playing on X date and I have two young kids and a wife.
Yeah, but
that
those are professional athletes. We're talking about student athletes.
But it's not apples to apples. But you can still have the same concerns, though. I mean, if I'm a student athlete and my mom has fought cancer and is high risk, you know, I'm still gonna look. I'm gonna look at it that way.
Of course,
I think it is.
But I don't know the mindset of these. I mean, let's be totally honest, okay? In full disclosure, who's kidding who? Not everybody's concerned. That's not how it works. We would like for everybody to be concerned. We started the show talking about a viral video that's out there of this pool party in the Ozarks. Does that look like those people are concerned? No. And there's a lot more people out there like that. So, you know, to each his own. Maybe he fits in the category of he's very concerned. Sure. Do we think there'll be people like that? I suspect there will be. That maybe their family are not comfortable with their kid going back and playing. I'm sure that'll happen. In fact, I suspect, I think that's inevitable that that'll happen. But I don't know one way or the other how Trevor Lawrence feels about it. Or whoever's projected Ja'Marr Chase, who's projected to be probably the second pick, the wide receiver from LSU. Or, you know, whoever they're projecting to be the third pick. Probably a big offensive lineman somewhere. I don't know. I don't know how they feel about it. Maybe they're concerned. Maybe they're not concerned.
Right, but you can say that about any professional, amateur.
Point.
You can say that about anybody. I think that that's where it is the same. That, you know, yes, with professional athletes, they obviously have money on the line. But Trevor Lawrence has money on the line too. He just hadn't gotten it yet.
Yep, he's got big money on the line.
Right, but still, I think he looks at it. There are so many things that you have to weigh, and even if you're the fringe guy, I think there's even more that you have to weigh of, okay, you could have a family member saying, listen, you know, Bob, we'll just insert name. If you go out and have a really good season, you know, right now you're projected to be a fifth round pick, but you could improve your stock to be a third round pick. Well, that there's money involved there, but still, I think you have to weigh the health risk too, that everybody is, but I just think all of this comes into play.
I think at this point, everything's on the table for sure. We'll come back. We'll talk about the attendance part. Where do we think? I saw Iowa State's AD came out. It does seem like, as we sit here and talk about all this, the other part is it seems like there's going to be fans in the stands. At what level, percentage-wise? Everybody's kind of got their own version, but we'll talk about that and more. Tim Hasselbeck coming up at high noon. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. You can stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. That's a way. Enable Alexa Skill or Google Home and ask it to play 102.5 The Game. Or you can live stream from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. All very good options to listen to 102.5 The Game. All right, I saw where Iowa State's AD came out and said that the current guidelines, state, local officials, looks like Cyclones will attempt in 2020, that their capacity is just over 61,000, that they will be limited to just 30,000 in the stands. I guess they've got about 22,000 season ticket holders that renewed, but looks like a little bit less than half. I wonder how that's going to play out. What do you think is going to be the percentage we're going to see around the country where they will allow fans, and will they all allow fans in the stands? Because it seems like a lot of this stuff is state by state, school by school.
I think that'll continue to be the case in a lot of places. And I also wonder who does make the final call, right? Let's say the school is saying, I think we can do, or maybe the athletic director, right, who sees, maybe he's more optimistic. Hey, we can go 50%. I think we can get 30,000 in there. And the governor says, nah, you know, our policy is going to be 20%. That falls in line with our guidelines throughout the state. We're not going to make a special exception. Like, who can they overrule the governor?
No. The governor says, nah, just nobody.
Yeah, that's
totally
possible
happen.
Too. So what happens?
Fan.
What happens when that happens? Who has the final say?
Well, and also I think you have to define fan. Student? Booster, season ticket holder, because I do think that matters, because this goes back to a conversation
waiver?
we've had. Yeah.
I don't know if that comes into play or not. Because it goes back to one of the original things we had on the first couple of days of shows that we did. Once the shutdown happened, it's like we have all these recommendations, right? We recommend that you stay at home. We recommend that you wear a mask. Well, can you, you know, does somebody have the ability to say, these aren't recommendations, these are requirements? Or is there going to be a little leeway? Hey, yeah, you can have 30,000 fans in there if every one of them is wearing a mask and if every one of them takes their temperature before they go in and is, you know, checked to make sure they have no symptoms, all of these things, right? That might, maybe if somebody is willing to go above and beyond, you could be rewarded by possibly having more fans in the stands. I think you would have to have that discussion.
Sure, absolutely.
I don't think anybody's going to get over 50%, right?
Well, you think that. Yeah, I mean, that would make the most sense.
You think that somebody will or they won't?
That
they'll be allowed to go over 50% capacity.
I think they won't. I think 50% is probably a good ballpark.
What if there's no guidelines? What if there's a state?
Right.
That's
why I'm hesitant.
Go for it.
Yeah, exactly. Like Florida.
That's why I'm hesitating.
We've seen some
guys
do whatever you want.
They've been going for it, for better or worse, right?
Here's the question, though, in my mind. So we know that it's going to look different in different places, right? You're going to have Florida that could do something. They could have their plan, and then you could have Iowa that has their plan, and it's going to vary from place to place. But ultimately, the person with full control on this is – the person going to the game or not going to the game, the fan,
yep.
Whether it's a student or a season ticket holder, a family, however you want to look at it. I am curious of just what people are thinking. Like,
yeah.
If you were a season ticket, let's use it right here. You're a season ticket holder at Neyland Stadium for the Vols. You have been your whole life. Your family has. You have gotten those tickets generation to generation, and You have your seats, and they've always been your seats. And come hell or high water, you always go to the game. This is obviously a very different situation that we've never faced before. So what are you thinking? You're a diehard Vols fan, but does this change it? Or are you like, yep, I'm going to put a mask on, and I'll be singing Rocky Top?
But if you're in the position of deciding how many people are allowed in there, you're not only leaving it up to the people. Right, because that is one aspect, right? Each individual has got to make their own decision. Am I willing to take the risk? Yeah, I'm crazy enough. I'll take the risk. I love going to the games. It's part of my life. I need to get out. I'm going. But also, if you're in the position of deciding what the number is, you can't just leave it up to the people necessarily, because you might have that same person who's willing to go. You're, because of the nature of this virus, you could have a lot of symptom-free people going in and spreading it. You're putting others in danger, right? Even if that person's willing to take the risk, they're risking everybody else around them. So you have to have extreme measures, I would say, in place with masks and everything you can do to mitigate those circumstances, right?
Right. I'm bringing this up because, out of curiosity, I want to know, you know, how many people are just like hell bent on going to a football game and don't think about that, like you're bringing up,
like the Ozarks, right? The Ozarks,
right.
Clearly
the Ozark
had a lot
people.
Of people that didn't care. They're
but,
fine.
But
I'm
how?
Many... I don't. If I get sick, I get sick. They're doing that, but they're affecting everybody else, because when they go home, now they're putting everybody that they go around them in jeopardy as well. Theoretically, if there was some little cluster, let's hope there wasn't, but there possibly was. That's what everybody's afraid of, right?
Right, but I'm also trying to give people a benefit here. I want to know how many are actually thinking like I am of, you know what, maybe I'm going to sit this one out this year. Because even though my school may say, hey, you're a longtime season ticket holder, you're in for as many games as you want to go to. We're going to go 50% capacity, but you're there. You have your seats. Your tickets, we'll gladly take your money, you're in. How many people are actually going to think, you know what, for the first time in as long as I can remember, I'm not going to go because I just don't think it's safe.
You know how I think that mentality is going to play out? This is what I think when you say all this. I think it's going to be real easy to sit and have that mentality when you're like, let's see, Furman in September's coming to Knoxville. Let's see. You know what? I don't think it's safe. But the following weekend, Chase, Florida's in town. Do you have a little bit different feeling about your guidelines, your safety, your health, your concerns? Oh, by the way, Alabama rolls into town in October, too. You still feel the same as that Troy game when they come to Knoxville? You see what I mean? I kind of feel like people are going to have different thoughts. Furman,
that's why
and
I bring
Troy,
this up.
Furman and Troy, they're probably like, you know what? Maybe not a good idea to go. Maybe I should be safe and just stay home. Florida and Alabama come to town. Do they still have the same thoughts? Still have the same feelings? Or does it change from game to game? That, to me, the real test is, how do you feel about Florida and Alabama coming to town? Because to me, it's easier to punt Furman, right? It's easier to say, I'm concerned. I'm going to stay home for the Furman game. A little bit easier of a decision.
Sure.
What about Florida and Alabama, though? Staying home for those?
You're asking me? Or no, you're asking the fans?
I'm just throwing that out there.
Because my answer is, yeah, I'm staying home and watching it on TV, probably. I don't have season tickets, but right now I'm probably just staying home. But I'll watch it. But diehard fan, this is why I'm bringing this up, because this is what I want to know. This is I want to know what the fan is thinking, what the diehard Vol, Ohio State, Florida, whatever, insert school here fan is thinking, that has hardly ever missed a game, would go on a broken leg if they had to. Does it change?
But also, you have to wonder, too, because I agree with you, Chase. Everybody's going to have to come to their own conclusion, and as we know, people are all over the map and how much risk they're willing to take. We had it in the context of our discussion of youth travel tournaments, right? There's going to be some people that are gung-ho, let's go, and others will be like, well, yeah, I don't know, let's take a look. But the ultimate question for whoever makes the call is, how much are we going to recommend, and how much are we just going to flat out make the decision for you? There will be no fans, or there will be 25% no more, no less, or 50% no more, no less. Because that's what has to be determined. Somebody's going to have to make that decision.
Yeah, I agree. Well,
okay, so somebody makes that decision. Then the other question is, how do you decide who gets what? Like, do you go down your ticket lists and go, well, the McFarlands have, you know, been season ticket holders for 20 years, and you know they have premium tickets, so they're going to get in. The Donics, they've been off and on for 5 years, and you know they sit up in the nosebleeds. We may not let them in. Is that the process?
How much money can I make? How much money can I bring in?
And are you willing, if you go at 25 to 30%, are you willing to stick to that considering all the losses that all the programs around the country have taken and the millions of dollars that they've already lost and the financial strain it's already put on everybody? Are you willing to go 25? Are the same decision makers willing to go 25 and 30% on those big games I referenced? Because that's money.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money they're turning away. Are they willing to stick to the – like I said, it's much easier to make a decision against Furman. Can you make the same decision against Florida and Alabama?
it's impossible to say, because I think you're going to get so many different answers. You may have one person that –
but that's one that, you know, you'd have to leave it up to school. The school will just have to individually decide how they want to do that. That's completely in their hands. That
right, I know.
Yeah, but you're acting
that's
like that's an easy decision for
that's
the school.
That's what I'm asking. Don't you think that's going to be difficult in that room of, okay, well, we can do a certain guideline for Furman, but are we going to have the same guidelines
sure,
for Florida and Alabama?
Because Frank from accounting is going to tell you how much money you made last year, and then it's going to change your decision.
Very difficult decisions. And no matter what you do, it's like the NHL return to play. It's not going to be perfect. And you're going to have a certain cross-section of people, in some cases, not happy with the policy you come up with, regardless of your policy. There is no policy, I wouldn't think, that will work. Now, there will be more schools than you know, let's just take a huge school 70 through 100 and whatever, Division One, where it probably wouldn't be that much
easier.
Of a problem.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, there's only a certain amount of schools that truly have
I'm cherry picking the big ones.
Going to create a problem.
Sure. I'm cherry picking the big ones. There's other schools, like you said, that this is not going to be an issue whatsoever. I went to an Akron Zips game last year. It's not going to be an issue, okay? Social distancing and figuring out who they're going to let into their games is not going to be an issue.
Yeah,
but they still have a football program, by the way.
But let me throw it to you like this, though. Okay, if you're Ohio State and you're hosting Akron, yeah, your decision is going to be different if you're an Ohio State season ticket holder or you're Ohio State in general. But what if you're Akron and you've entered into one of those deals where Ohio State's agreed to come play at your place?
That's a great question. Is everybody still going to get paid the same? I mean, what are we talking about with Major League Baseball? Nobody's getting paid the same, right? So how about those money games for the smaller schools that depend on that gate, on that big
Maybe they
payday.
Won't even be played.
Right.
What's one thing that's been tossed out? Conference games only has been one thing that has been put out as a possible direction that they would go. Here's another one. Let's say it's in this category of schools that we're talking about that have the ability are going to have to make those choices if they can have 33% or 50%, whatever the number is, and they know they're going to meet that, right? And they're going to have to turn people away. Does everybody that comes in have to sign a waiver that says you're not going to sue the school if you happen to get sick here? You're coming in at your own risk? Is that part of the formula for being able to come to the game?
Oh, I would think it would have to be.
Sign a waiver? How long are you going to tell people to get there 8 hours before kickoff? What do you mean sign a waiver?
Well, you're already asking to take people's temperature. I mean,
we already talk about how long it takes to get in these stadiums already. Now you want them signing waivers?
You sign a waiver to get the ticket.
Prayers for Nissan Stadium.
Wow.
Oh, my mic was.
Yeah, you're on, just so you know. There's a lot of places that have trouble getting people in. Maybe you have to do – maybe you do something in advance. I don't know.
But the liability question is going to be a big question, right? Not only for the players, but for the people that you allow into these games.
Yeah, but how do you prove that? I mean, there's no way you could ever prove that. There's no way – there's been – to my knowledge, I have read – or seen nothing that says we are able to pinpoint where it came from. So you're telling me you can be like, yep, I went to the game against Furman. That's where I got it. Yep, I know it, so I'm suing them. There's no proof that I've seen anywhere that you could ever make that work in a court of law. Do we have the ability to track where it came from and where we picked it up, where we tested positive, where we contracted the virus? I think that would be extremely difficult. You can't do that. Nobody can prove that right now. So
right.
What's the point of the waiver?
Okay. Well,
We're still trying to figure out testing.
Let me throw a hypothetical out there, all right? Darren goes to the game. He notices coming in that X school, they didn't really do a very good job of screening the people coming in. Right? They screened some people a little bit here or there, but they didn't want the lines to back up. They weren't social distancing, and then boom. Unfortunately, there's a cluster of cases that you can probably reasonably trace back to. It looks like they were all at that game at University X. They were all at that game. They all got it. And a lot of the people are saying, well, they didn't do a very good job of tracing or tracking people and testing people on the way in. I mean, you don't think there's somebody out there some lawyer would be calling all those people saying, hey, we might have a case here. If they were negligent, we might have something here. I'm just looking at possible things that a school is going to have to defend itself with.
And then the other attorney goes, I want you now to write down every place you've been in the last week, everywhere you've been outside your house.
Yeah.
And then you're going to make a list of everywhere you've been outside your house for the last week, and then you're going to say, yeah, look at that list. You're telling me you've pinpointed to that game? Really?
I believe a court of law would call that reasonable doubt.
Yeah, I'd say that would be really hard. By the way, we face that every day. By the way, we go into wherever you go, department store, grocery store, pick anything you go into right now, and you already see people that are not doing things that we're talking about. They don't have a mask. They're not social distancing. They're on top of each other. And you already have that going on, right? It's not just what we're talking about. That's going on every day. So is that any different than the scenario you're putting out there? I don't think so. I don't think it's any different than a trip to Home Depot, right? I mean, you could see four people on top of each other in a big store.
My point is this. You would think that the schools are going to try to do whatever they can to protect themselves from liability.
Sure.
You and I can argue whether that's worthy of a lawsuit or not. We know there's a lot of lawsuits where it's very debatable who's going to win the case or if there's somebody's going to settle and have to pay somebody money. It happens all the time. The Lance Armstrong 30 for 30, there's still cases going on against him, right?
So isn't he just icky? I can't get back. He's still icky.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But right, are you saying, real quick, you're saying it's silly to have them sign waivers or do it because you know CYA?
I guess what I'm getting at is I don't see any purpose. There's no way anyone could ever prove that.
Right. They're going to do it.
If that's the case, everywhere we go, we would be signing waivers. Every place we step in publicly. There's all kinds of people out there listening right now that own businesses. Are you signing waivers everywhere you walk in?
No. I just carry a stack with me.
Why would it be in a football game?
Hand them out.
I mean, if we're not signing waivers every day we're walking into public places with people, with complete strangers, then why would we start at a football game? That's all I'm bringing up. All right, we'll come back. Tim Hasselbeck, he's not icky. We don't get an icky feeling. Lance Armstrong, icky. Tim Hasselbeck, no. We'll start the third hour with him. Next on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.